Where in hell can you go? Far from the things that you know, far from the sprawl of concrete that keeps crawling its way. Keep your heart off your sleeve.
Guppy Productions presents Series 2 of From Colchester to Sulawesi, written for Colm Radio by Phil Boast and Paula Larcher. Episode 3 of 6, in which Ed has a haircut.
Despite being located in the same grounds and in close proximity to one another, our local dive centre is a separate business entity from its mother hotel. And the unwritten agreement that we have with the manager of the dive centre is a simple one, and is effective in its simplicity. We have provided an alternative kind of accommodation for guests. We are less expensive than the hotel, and provide a more personal, intimate atmosphere which suits certain of our clientele, and this has provided us with our first guests, before we have been able to become self-sufficient in this respect. The fact that Paula and I are English probably also has some bearing on the matter. We understand the workings of the minds of Europeans, Australians, and so forth, whereas the hotel is an entirely Indonesian-run affair which, although well enough run, lacks a Western presence. When Bahawo Lodge gets going in its own right, our guests will use the dive centre, and thus will the arrangement continue to be symbiotic. Tim and Julie have already done quite a bit of diving here, and now, once again, there are Alex and Edward, so the symbiosis has, in a small way, already begun. As that which one might call a fringe benefit, which is nevertheless significant to me, I get to strap on the dive gear and jump in the water whenever I wish. So, some of the best coral reefs in the world are available to me for the asking. In fact, I don't even have to ask. And with this aspect of the arrangement, I am more than happy. During their time here, Alex and Edward take to the water with me on several occasions, and Paula and the rest of the family join us sometimes on the dive boats for snorkeling, or just for the boat rides around the beautiful islands of Bunaken National Marine Park, which is in itself a rewarding enough experience.
We have by now become friends with all of the dive guides, and after a lovely day snorkeling and diving, we find a few of them on the hotel jetty cutting one another's hair with a bare razor blade. Ed decides that he would like a haircut, and despite his mother's reservations and reluctance on the Indonesian's part, having never cut a European's hair, Ed offers himself up to the experience. By general consensus, it turns out to be the best haircut he has ever had. The dive guides are exclusively young men, and all are married, a fact which they keep a well-guarded secret when on occasion they have romantic dalliance with young women on holiday, who may be seeking distraction other than diving in the warm tropical ambience. This can and does get the young men into all kinds of trouble with their wives and with the lady who manages the dive centre. But boys will be boys and girls will be girls. And the boys seem not to learn from past experience or the experience of others. Thus do we quickly agree one golden rule with our staff at the lodge, which translates as no testing the guests, who are there to be served, and only in the more traditional and accepted use of the term. So we'll see how that one goes when we start having young female clientele. Meanwhile, and less contentiously, we need to buy some things for the lodge. And whilst Phil has acquired certain life skills along the way, shopping certainly isn't one of them. So while I have Carol and Mummy here, I take full advantage. We take the Jeep to Monado to buy mirrors, wall hangings and such. Non-essential things which add finishing touches to the guest rooms, lounge and so on. The garden is Phil's department, and he and Janet, who aside from her parliamentary duties is a keen gardener, spend time together around the lodge grounds, looking at the horticultural aesthetics of it all. We have a driveway and parking area, and paved pathways where pathways are needed, so the structure is there, But we need colour now and more fruit trees. And for this, I defer to Phil and tell him to get on with it. There are no garden centres here, but there are plant nurseries, especially in the cooler highlands, which sell beautiful tropical shrubs and herbaceous plants. So we take a couple of trips here and come back laden with plants. One thing we have learned is that whereas in England, where trees and shrubs can take years to come to maturity, here, in the warm, verdant tropics, everything grows at a quite alarming rate, and everything grows. Fence posts take root and turn unbidden into trees, and things that we have had planted on previous visits here have put on what is to us an extraordinary amount of growth. Colours work differently here too. Whereas in the duller English climate, subtle, muted colour combinations are the order of the day. Here, in the bright equatorial sunshine, anything goes, really. And colours which would be seen to clash in our former home look fine together. In any case, thus does our time with the family pass. And in the meantime, our French guests have departed. And a Dutch guest arrives, called Reinier, or Mr. Reinier, as we refer to him with our staff. He's here for the diving, so here's a dive buddy for Phil. And a few days after his arrival, we say fond farewells to the family. This has for them, I think, been further affirmation that we have done something special in the building of Bahowo Lodge and creating our new business. The business has yet to prove itself, of course, but everyone has enjoyed themselves, and the lodge has worked well in all respects with its first full occupancy. The boys have done some fantastic diving with Phil, and the next time they come, Hattie will be old enough to take her junior diving qualification and join them underwater, something which she is very eager to do. We've only seen Onny on a couple of occasions. We've given him money and said that we will see him to discuss everything once the family is gone and we have more time. He's behaving oddly, but behaving oddly seems to be normal for Onny these days. So it would be odd if he was behaving normally, really. And we'll have to see how that goes as well.
The last weekend of August is Happy Birthday Bahowo, where the village has traditionally marked and celebrated its founding, when the fathers to the oldest generation now living first rowed their canoes through the mangrove forest and onto the beach. There are no organised events as such, but rather every family prepares a buffet-style meal and gives open invitation to every other family to share their repast. Indonesian food is usually eaten at room temperature, so the timing isn't critical. Anyone can visit anyone else whenever they so wish, and there will always be food. We are told by our staff that around lunchtime we should visit the house of Mr. Benjamin, the head man. So we do. And we take Renier with us and enjoy a goodly helping of the fine fare provided by Benjamin and his wife, Linne. This is a mistake. Aris then escorts us to his own house, where we are expected, out of politeness, to eat something, and from thence we are taken to the house of Phillips and Fenny, Melda's parents, where another fine spread is laid out before us, and where, so as not to offend, we do the best we can. By the time we have visited our fourth house, we are all feeling a bit queasy and quite unable to eat anything at all. Fortunately, in this respect, Renier is checking out today, and it is suddenly very important that Paula and I both accompany him to the airport, so unfortunately our social activities must be curtailed. Thus do we avoid the fifth house, which would have been a house too far, and we have learned another golden rule of Indonesian village etiquette, that on such occasions you don't eat too much at the first house. In any case, Renier departs, and for the first time since our arrival 2 weeks ago, we are on our own at the lodge, and pass our first night alone here. This gives us the opportunity to assess how things have gone so far, and we quickly conclude that things haven't gone badly, really. We have entertained our first guests, Sulte's cooking has been exceptional, and this will, we think, be a significant selling point in the future, and we've enjoyed eating with our guests at the evening table. Renier has become a friend and has vowed to return as soon as may be. Everything has worked, Aris and Nyoman have done their jobs well, and all in all we reckon we can do this, and we go to sleep feeling quite pleased with ourselves and our efforts thus far. In the morning we awaken to a text message from Oni. He will know that we are alone now and has waited for this moment. It's a message which threatens to change everything, and which has the potential to stop our new enterprise and our new lives in their newly made tracks. We knew that sooner or later we would have to do battle with Oni, and so it begins.
Motherland, cradle me, close my eyes, lullaby me to sleep. Keep me safe, lie with me, stay beside me, don't go. Don't you go.
Find out what happens when we return to the adventures of Phil and Paula in Sulawesi in next week's episode of Bill's Big Bag of Onions, here on Cone Radio.